Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 7, text number 10. This is, the chapter title is Further Inquiries by Vidura. Brother. What else can you think about Vidura? He's an incarnation of Yamaraj. Very good. And from the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, we know that Vidura left the royal palace, right? Why did Vidura leave the royal palace? Just before the Kurukshetra battle, Vidura left. Why did Vidura leave? Why did Vidura leave? He was insulted by Duryodhana. What was the insult? Krishna came to make a peace offer in a very rude, insulting way. Duryodhana rejected the peace offer, so Krishna left. After Krishna left, some other interesting things happened, but one of them was Vidura then stood up and spoke very strongly against Duryodhana. Then he turned to Dhritarashtra and said, you're to blame. You're the king. He is your son. He's ruling on your behalf. But you're bringing the destruction of our whole dynasty because of this person, this Duryodhana. Last chance to save the kingdom. Get rid of him. Right in front of Duryodhana. Get rid of him. And Duryodhana stood up and insulted him so harshly, saying, this person, so-called family member, born of a Shudra mother, has just been a disturbance for our whole royal family. He should be beaten within an inch of his life and driven out of the royal palace. Duryodhana was such a person, he could have done it. Vidura said nothing further, he just walked out. Realizing, I tried. I don't have the capacity to stop the wheel of fate and this blind elder brother of mine and this wicked Duryodhana. So he left. They went on pilgrimage. So that's described in the first canto. Way over in the third canto, the sages say to Suta Goswami, earlier you were describing about this pilgrimage of Vidura when he left the royal palace. Could you describe that pilgrimage? He went to all the holy places. It must have been very wonderful. And you also described that he met, who did he meet? Remember? Maitreya. Very good. And he became enlightened. He not only became enlightened, he became a perfected soul, Mahabhagavat. And the discussions between Vidura, who's so qualified, and Maitreya, who's so qualified, it must have been wonderful discussions. Could you describe that? The topics that they discussed with one another? Two questions. This pilgrimage and their discussions. So, skipping over a lot of nice things, in chapter 7, Vidura has met Maitreya. Vidura asked a number of questions. First, he appreciated the good fortune of Maitreya for having heard directly from Krishna just before Krishna left this world. Because Maitreya was hearing Krishna speaking to Uddhava. He heard Uddhava Gita. He didn't just like read it. He was seated in the forest, just the three of them, Krishna, Uddhava, and Maitreya, hearing the whole the Uddhava Gita. And the Lord blessed him that he would realize it, assimilate that knowledge, and then he would instruct. He told them, soon Vidura will come, and I would like you to instruct him. So before Krishna left, he gave Maitreya some service to do. And here is the service. It's instructing Vidura. This is very blessed, very special. So he expressed his great appreciation for Maitreya's good fortune, and he presented a number of questions before him about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it wasn't just like information questions, because Vidura was already vastly learned. It wasn't a technology thing. It was, he wanted to hear about the Lord. And specifically, he wanted to hear about the Lord in terms of this wonderful act of creation. Similar to what Narada asks Brahma in the second canto. How does he do it? Again, it's not technology or information. It's he wants Brahma. Excuse me. Yeah. Shukadeva Goswami is asked that question by Maharaj Parikshit. And Maharaj Parikshit, then Shukadeva Goswami refers to a similar question by Narada to Brahma. And here is a similar question by Vidura to Maitreya. It's like three times within these first early cantos. It's an important subject matter. It's an important subject matter so that we can understand the merciful nature of the Lord and the inextricable relationship between the creation and God, because we're within this creation. Like anywhere you look, look this way, look that way, look up, look down, anywhere you look, there's this material energy. So what's the relationship of this material energy to God? Like, you know, it's important that we see the relationship as we're moving through the steps and activities of our life. What's the relationship? That means, you know, what's our relationship with God? Because we have a relationship with that which is from God. It's part of our relationship with God. Very fundamental. And the illusory potency has people get it wrong. Like, wrong. Like, fundamentally wrong. So that's part of the, after Maitreya explains how the Lord, it's the details of the unfolding of creation. It's very, very fascinating description. A little technical, but very fascinating. Then, the beginning of this chapter, chapter 7, Maitreya has finished giving the answer, and Vidura is now asking a second set of questions from those first answers. And the second set of questions include things, I could read the verses, but the paraphrased, it's, wait a minute, how does this happen? Because he who is unchangeable, that's a description of Brahman, it's not changing, and matter is ever-changing. How does something all spiritual and unchanging produce that which is not spiritual and always changing? How does illusion come from reality? How does matter come from spirit? That's an important theological question, because a lot of people have it wrong. Even they're theistic, or trying to be, or spiritual, or trying to be. They get it wrong. So, and different theologies are different ways of ascribing the answer to that question. So, what's the Bhagavad teaching on this question? And perfect person to answer the question is Maitreya, because he heard it directly from Krishna. He says, if you say, in his question, Vidura, he's expert. He says, if you say, it's the Lord's Leela, how does he do it? It's his Leela. If this is his Leela, how do the activities of the unchangeable take place and exhibit qualities without the modes of nature? So like Krishna is nirguna, without material qualities. But then these activities are with material qualities. So how does he go from the unchanging Lord without qualities to activities that have qualities while maintaining he has no material qualities? It looked like a material quality, like, you know, making the creation happen. And with the qualities of material creation. So how does that happen? Then he asks another really good question. Of course, they're all really good. The living entity. Qualitatively, the same as the original unchangeable supreme. And this unchangeable supreme is right within the heart of that living entity, side by side with the living entity. He who is the protector of those who are depending upon him, and right next to them is the living entity who becomes bewildered and in a bewildered state suffers. And their knowledge becomes covered and they're in illusion. And this is a philosophical way of asking the question that commonly people ask. If God is all good and all great, why does he create a situation where people suffer? You've heard that one before in different versions. Are you with me? That's a yes. Okay. God is all good. God is all powerful. Yes and yes. Okay. God is all good and God is all powerful. So why does he create a situation where living entities suffer? This is even like, how is it even possible? Because he who is the protector of those who he's side by side become covered by illusion and bewildered and suffer right next to the Supreme Lord. It's the example is given, if supposing, you know, you're standing right next to a police officer and somebody comes along and beats you up right in front of the police officer. He just stands there and lets it happen. Police officer is supposed to protect you. That's what they do. And he does nothing? How's this? How's living entity suffering? Good question. How does this happen? Then here's another one. the pure soul. In pure is pure consciousness. Correct? It's correct. Pure soul is pure consciousness. And is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? Similar, but it's another slice of that question. He concludes by saying, "Oh, great and learned one, my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress of this nescience, and I therefore request you to clear it up." It's two things. He's saying it's distressful to see living entities in that condition. He's also saying, my mind is bewildered by how this could happen, and that's causing me, this bewilderment is causing me distress, so please clear up my bewilderment and my distress, and for that matter, the living entities that don't have to be deluded. You know, it's like Jiva Goswami's description in Bhakti Sandarbha, where he asks the question, how does the living entity become conditioned? Because if you understand how the living entity becomes conditioned, it gives you a very clear indicator of how to become unconditioned. How did we get into this room? That door right over there. And so that's how we can get out of the room. Very, very logical. So how the living entity become conditioned tells us how we can become free from conditioning. And it keeps us, by knowledge at least, it keeps us detached from the circumstances that cause us bewilderment and delusion. Even now, even we're like getting there, not yet free from delusion. Jnana vairagya. From knowledge comes detachment from the causes of bewilderment. Okay. When Maitreya hears this question, you know what Maitreya does? Maitreya pauses and he seems to be bewildered. He's concealing his greatness. It's a quality of a person who is pure and has a great asset. That person who is not pure, they like to show their asset. Look at my money, look at my knowledge, look at my strength, look at me. And a very pure soul does the opposite. They don't exhibit that greatness. They appear just as Vidura was presenting himself as a bewildered entity. Maitreya is also presenting himself that way. Oh, this is such a difficult question. I don't know if I can answer your question. I'm not qualified. It's humility, and that humility is a protection. Protection from pride. And pride means we lose our connection with Krishna. So a devotee always stays connected with Krishna, and before Krishna, what do they feel? Very tiny and insignificant. Whatever that service is that we have to do, before Krishna, we're tiny and insignificant. So, Maitreya begins to speak. The verse that immediately precedes this morning's verse is the first part of Maitreya's answer. He gets out a hammer and smashes impersonal philosophy. That's the first thing he does. That is, you know, what's a wrong understanding of all of this is impersonalism. Because the tendency is that there are these two major categories of Maya. One is trying to be the Lord of all we survey, just like it's described in the Divine Indvanyak chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Trying to be the Lord, the Purusha, of Prakriti, although we're not. We're also Prakriti. But trying to be, through fruitive activity and sense gratification, the enjoyer of all we survey. And if that doesn't work, or it doesn't work, recognizing it doesn't work, one becomes frustrated and then becomes spiritual. That means you become one with God. It's either be God or be God. You follow? God is the enjoyer of Prakriti. It's his energy. But we're not the enjoyer of Prakriti. It's something else happens. And so then we commonly, this Mayavad tendency that says, it's all false and I'm God. So here's what Maitreya says. Right in the Bhagavatam, even before Shankaracharya thought about appearing, or thought about what am I going to say if I appear, here's Maitreya. Certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman or the Personality Godhead is overcome by illusion or maya, and at the same time they maintain he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. That's the verse. You know, that's the where the jiva or the atma identifies himself as I am Paramatma. In fact, there's no distinction between Atma and Paramatma, because then there'd be two, and you can't have two because it's all one, so it's all I am God. That was like cool, right? Da 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 da. I'm God. And how is it that although I'm God, I've become conditioned by maya? Well, I'm not really conditioned by maya. It's just illusion. Da 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 da. It's very illogical. So, because going back to what Vidura asked, he who is unchanging appears to be the cause of that which is ever changing. So some persons, Maitreya says that the Supreme becomes covered by maya at the same time as unchanged and unchangeable and unchanging. So if that's the case, then maya is greater than Brahman. But we can't have maya greater than Brahman, because all there is Brahman. So what you do is you just say, well, maya is false. Huh? That's a long purport, but it's against all logic. So now we have to have two. There's the living entity, and there's the Supreme. And by the indication of the Supreme, the living entity becomes, or by the sanction of the Supreme, the living entity becomes covered. Here's this morning's verse. Yad artena vina musha pungsa atma viparyaya. Pati yata upadrashtuhu sva shiras chedanadikaha. The living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. He has no factual background, like a man who dreams that he sees his head cut off. Now, there's some lacking of logic here also, because how can you see your head cut being cut off? Because the place of seeing is the head. It's possible the head could be cut off. That's possible. But it's not possible to see the head being cut off. In a dream, you can maybe see something. There you are in the dream, and you see your head cut off in the dream. But it's just a dream. Otherwise, it's not possible. It is possible to have your head cut off. And it is possible to see things. But you can't see your head being cut off. So like that, similarly, there is the living entity who sees all kinds of things by the influence of the dream state or the Maya state of consciousness. I'm going to read the purport. A teacher in school, this wasn't a Vedic school or anything like that, a teacher in school once threatened his pupil and he would cut off the pupil's head and hang it on the wall so that the child could see how his head had been cut off. The child became frightened and stopped his mischief. Similarly, two things. The miseries of the pure soul, and the second thing is the disruption of his self-identification. Two things. Miseries and disruption of self-identification. Because first you have to forget who you are. Then you have to adopt an identity that you aren't. There are these two, avaranatmika shakti and pratpekshatmika shakti, described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and from time to time Prabhupada would refer to it, the throwing potency and the covering potency of Maya. So one is, forget who you are. That's the throwing potency. Then the covering potency, accept a different identity that you aren't. Our common term for that is upadis, designations. Sarva upadi vinir muktam. Do you know that verse? No? Our Shloka Raj over here, does he know? Your son, does he know? Sarva upadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Bhakti rutam. And what does upadi mean? Sarva upadi vinir muktam. Mukti means liberation. Being freed from sarva means all. Upadi means designations. Just like, you know, you're a student. That's a designation. I'm a teacher. That's a designation. Man and woman, young and old, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, those are designations. They're designations. It's not who we are. We may act in a responsible way according to our designation. You're a student, I'm a teacher, I'm a sannyasi, someone's grahastha. If I started doing the behaviors of a grahastha, it would be a disturbance. If a grahastha started doing the behaviors of a sannyasi, it would be a disturbance. So we act within our social position, but it's not who we are. It's an upadi. It's a designation. So bhakti means to no longer identify as I am this designation, but I am Krishna's eternal servant. And from the position of being a student or a teacher or a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or this or that, householder, sannyasi, we perform our duties in service to Krishna. So before that sense of accepting a false identity, our true identity, here it's disruption of self-identification, or another way of saying that is self-abandonment. We have, you know, who we really are. We just abandon who we really are and we accept something else. These are all managed by the external energy of the Lord, Maya, which controls those mischievous living entities who want to go against the will of the Lord. So the root is going against the will of the Lord. And then these other things start to happen. However, in reality, actually, there is no bondage. That's the good news. We're not bound, conditioned souls. There is no bondage. Nor is there misery. That's some other good news. Stub your toe and it doesn't hurt. No misery. Nor does he ever lose his pure knowledge, at least from a spiritual perspective. The soul is never hurt. The soul is never absent of real knowledge. The soul is not limited or bound by matter. It, because we have abandoned ourselves and we accept this other identity, we're going for a ride, like, you know, in a dream state. So what's real? You're in a dream. Classic example, Prabhupada's example, is you're in a dream and you're a king. That's a designation. You're sitting on a throne and you're the king. And then in the dream, into the palace comes a tiger. And you're feeling fear and you're running from the tiger and the tiger is chasing you and then you wake up. And there you are, lying in your bed, perspiring and heart palpitating, and you're not the king and there's no tiger. Material life is like a dream. Only we're accepting that to be reality and abandoning the real reality, who we really are. But that who we really are is never lost. It's just temporarily covered by a dream state or by Maya. Maya is managing the whole affair and we're buying into it. Yeah, I like that Maya. I like this particular kind, this one over here. I'll take 10 of them, please. And I'll pay the price. And we try to enjoy it, like, you know, or feel uncomfortable. So I want to return this merchandise and get one like that over there. We try that one for a while. And endlessly, by the agency of Maya. Continuing, in his pure consciousness, when he thinks a little seriously about his position, he can understand that he is eternally subordinate to the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and that his attempt to become one with the Supreme Lord is a false illusion. So first is those identities that we adopt and try to become the enjoyer of, but then maybe, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, it's no fun. So I want to become spiritual being. That's, you know, go from sense gratification and fruitive activity to a spiritual position. But if you don't have a qualified spiritual teacher, where are you going to go? You go to this impersonalism thing. It's negation of material becomes spiritual. What's spiritual is what this material world is not. Definition by negation. So here, there's sense gratification. There's no sense gratification. You just go that neti-neti process. Here there is form, therefore there must be no form. Here there's personality, there must be no personality. Here there's qualities, there must be no qualities. Definition by negation. But it just turns out it's just like the flip side of a coin. It's the same coin, heads or tails. It's not spiritual. It's another, because the spirit behind it is, I'm God. It's I'm God or I'm God, but it's the same coin. I'm God or I'm God. Heads or tails. By identification or by negation. An enjoyer or the supreme enjoyer. Enjoyer of what? Enjoyer of my position of being the supreme enjoyer, because not, there isn't anything else. There's only one thing. It's only Brahman. So I just enjoy being Brahman. And renounce the world as false. These activities are performed under the dictation of the illusory energy. The experience is compared to, once again, the experience of one's having one's head cut off in a dream. A man who's head has been cut off also sees that his head has been cut off. If a person's head is severed, he loses his power to see. Therefore, if a man sees that his head has been cut off, it means that he thinks like that in hallucination. So the world, Maya, is a hallucination. It's being compared to that hallucination. Not factual. It's something. You know, here's a chair. I'm sitting in it. I'm not sitting in imagination. It's a chair. But before it was a chair, it was something else. And after it's a chair, it's something else. So temporarily, I'm using this thing called chair, but the essence is something else. The essence is earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's what it is. In a particular configuration that's here today and gone tomorrow. So we're accepting that here today, gone tomorrow thing as reality when it's not. It's here today and gone tomorrow. But there are things that are unchanging and eternal. That's where our consciousness should go, because that's who we are. We're also unchanging and eternal. So what's that reality? Spiritual life means seeking that reality, and it's achieved by mercy. But to get that mercy, you have to let go of the Maya conception. That I am this temporary thing. A living entity is eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and he has this knowledge with him. Like, that's unchanging. But artificially, keyword. Artificially, he thinks that he's God himself. And that although he is God, he has lost his knowledge due to Maya. This conception has no meaning. This is the process by which knowledge is covered. What's the process? It's Maya. The appearance of that which is not. Our knowledge is covered. And we buy it. Yes, I like that one. My knowledge is covered. And once our knowledge is covered, it's really hard to get out of the position where our knowledge is covered. We're stuck. Or we have a tendency to be stuck because we're attached in spirit. We're attached to the notion, the bhav of Ishwara. Very strong, Ishwara bhav. Ishwara hum hum bhogi in the language of Bhagavad Gita. And even if we try to get out of that bondage, tendency is another bondage, the last snare of Maya. You've heard this so many times. What's the last snare of Maya? I am God. The so-called liberation of thinking oneself God is the last reaction of avidya by which the living entity is entrapped. Even when he's entrapped, his constitutional position hasn't changed. He's a servant. He's a servant of God. And he's serving God's illusory energy. Or he can serve God's internal energy. And one is clear and the other is perverted. And that's a choice. So what we've done is, according to, it'll continue, but you know, this is the beginning of Maitreya's explanation of this very deep subject matter. How do things material come from something spiritual? How does the living entity, which is spiritual, and side by side with the Supreme Lord, become implicated in illusion? When his state of pure consciousness exists eternally and is not changed by circumstance, time, or anything else. So now I'm going to give you a surprise quiz question. I'll give you two or three of them. This is first canto question. Hint. Where in the first canto is all of this discussed? Think carefully. First canto. Huh? Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, those verses in Chapter 7 of Canto 1, 4 through 7, 5 through 7, very important verses. Why they're very important verses? It's the essence of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Narada instructed Vyas two things: sit down and trance of meditation upon the personality of Godhead and get a realization from that trance. The second is, based upon what you experience in that trance, write a book. The Srimad Bhagavatam. So the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is in those three verses. Next question. What's the Sanskrit for those? Text 5. You have a first canto here? Anybody know the Sanskrit? Yes? And, well, no, just that one first. So the first part is saying what he does. He fixes his mind in trance upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what he was told to do. Samyak, complete absorption. Samadhi, fixed upon the Personality of Godhead. Apashyat means he saw. Pashyati, he saw. Apashyat. Purusham Purnam. What's Purusham Purnam? What's Purusha? Supreme Lord, yeah. And Purna means complete. Complete. He saw Purusham Purnam, he saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness. And his fullness means in the spiritual world. He's seated at his cottage, his hermitage, by the bank of a sacred river. He's absorbed in meditation and he sees the Supreme Lord in his fullness. He sees the spiritual world. Because the Lord includes everything. Not just like, you know, a face in the cloud or standing in the middle of a stark background. He's this whole spiritual world is there. Apashat Purusham Purnam Mayam Cha Tad apashrayam. Maya means maya. The illusory energy, cha, is also there. Tad apashrayam. Tad apashrayam means completely under his control, under his full control. So, seeing the Supreme Lord means he has his potencies. He has the unlimited potencies. But they're primarily in three categories and subcategories of those three categories, internal, external, marginal. So the marginal is referred to in the next verse. And this is how the living entity becomes illusioned, how the living entity becomes covered. Besides Navayovana, who knows that next verse? Okay, you want to unpack that one? Yaya sammohita jiva. So there's the jiva. That's one of the potencies of the Lord. Jiva shakti, the living entity, the marginal potency. And moha. And sammoha. Moha means bewildered or illusioned. And sammoha means completely bewildered. Yaya sammohita jiva. That yaya refers to the maya has him bewildered, deluded. Atmanam trigunatmakam. Although he's paropi, although he's transcendental, api means although, para means transcendental. Para api, although transcendental, he's thinking of himself as trigunatmakam. I'm a product of the modes of nature. So that's, there's this self-abandonment, or in the language of this verse that we read this morning, the purport rather, disruption of his self-identification, forgetfulness of his real identity, and acceptance of a false identity. I'm a product of the modes of nature. It's like for travel now, for people, because of the terrorism program that's going on and this big problem that happened some time ago in Bombay where the terrorists came and took over and, you know, big scene. Those people that came were coming on a tourist visa. They had multiple entry tourist visas and they came and went and came and went and came and went. So Indian Immigration Office now has this policy. You have a multiple entry visa, you come and go, you can't come back within 2 months without a special permit. So, you know, I've been coming and going in less than 2 months several times now, so I've got to get these special permits. And it's, you know, in one sense, it's okay. They're trying to protect, but I don't know. Just like when I came into India at the, showing my passport, the fellow didn't know anything about it. He's the guy. He's the guard at the gate. He didn't know anything about it. So he took it to his supervisor, and his supervisor didn't know anything. Well, he went to the back room. They didn't know anything about it. He had to call up, you know, God and say, you know, how do we do this? Because I had to get a special permit. And I showed him, this is my special permit. I left India on January 17th, and I'm coming back on February something, and that's within less than 2 months interval of being out of the country, and so I had to get a special permit. Here it is. But, you know, when you identify who you are, my point is, okay, who are you? What's your purpose? If you gave him a spiritual answer, you'd fail. They'd reject you. You don't get a special permit. You have to be, you know, samuppadi. We can't relate to you otherwise. What's your address? Mother's name, father's name, date of birth, social security number, you know, all these things that identify, all these labels that identify who you aren't. And we have, you know, have to be invested in who we aren't in order to come and go. System isn't built for self-realization. We require very careful teaching and very qualified teachers to get beyond that bondage of misidentification with what we're not. And even when we try, the bondage is so strong. It's so strong because we like being the enjoyer, or at least trying to be the enjoyer. If I don't try to be the enjoyer, what do I have left? I have nothing. I don't want to have nothing. I want to have something. We're very conditioned, although we're situated in pure consciousness, in our original state. It requires purity of lifestyle, purity of habit, purity of body, purity of mind, in order for these subject matters to like go anywhere, like, you know, inside. It's not possible without a pure lifestyle to have this message take you somewhere, take you back to Godhead. The Bhagavatam is capable, but we have to have, just like it's described in a very nice purport, you have to be pure in habit. have to be willing to undergo that greater purification to get released from the strong grip of illusion. And the fundamental part of that strong grip is how we regard the Supreme Lord. But we can't have the proper even conception of the Supreme Lord, even there may be some willingness, without habits that are pure and proper guidance. Okay, so we'll continue this evening. See if there's any discussion or questions. Yes?
Maharaj, when we say that the knowledge is, soul has its original knowledge, it's not lost, it's already covered. But one may technically question that knowledge means conscious awareness of a particular thing.
Not necessarily. One can argue that. Okay. Is it not possible to have something that you don't have your hand on? You know, you say you have a treasury. Only when I'm touching my treasury do I have it. That's not reasonable. Svataksita gyan is the phrase of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There is inherent knowledge within the soul. Or we're Satchitananda, but it's covered. A jewel, a diamond, can be covered by mud. You take the cleansing agents and remove the mud, and the diamond is sparkling. So knowledge is part of that inherent quality, Sat and Chit and Ananda, but covered. It's because the capacity is there. Because it's our nature, Satchitananda, then the covering of Maya brings this knowledge out in some distorted way. Something like, you know, so here's this light bulb, and the backside, it's frosted, so the light doesn't go this way, it goes that way. That side is black, the inside is silver, so the light is directed that way. But there's actually a light, a filament inside, or that's sending light in all directions. So the soul is pure consciousness and full knowledge and blissful. Not being exhibited, but it's there because it's not being exhibited because of the covering. The classic Vedic example of this is a candle in a clay pot or a covered pot. That's what it says, a covered pot, but like a clay pot. So you put a candle in a clay pot and no light goes. It's darkness, just as if there's no light, no candle at all. But you break the pot and there is light. There always was light. Anyone else? Okay. Since change of conception from temporary to eternal takes place only by mercy. Well, it doesn't take place only by mercy. It's necessary. Effort is also necessary. What is the role of changing our conception, I am this body? What is the role of changing? What is our role? What's the role of changing the conception? I need clarification of the question to answer the question. Who wrote the question? What is it that you'd like to know?
We say that actually by much, like we require effort to change, to actually get on a spiritual conception. Like we say that we have to theoretically understand that I am not this body. But the philosophical understanding that I am not this body, I am eternal, that conception must be there. Then how actually? And how do we actually? There is one thing that we theoretically understand that we are eternal spirit souls. I am not this body.
I got that much, yeah.
But there is also a theoretical understanding. I am not a body. I am spirit soul. So, like, my understanding
you're
was
you're making the distinction between jnana and vijnana. So, what makes the difference between going from theoretical to practical? That's your question.
Like, I mean, we have a theoretical understanding. What is the effect of the theoretical understanding on actually going to the spiritual realm?
It's necessary, but insufficient. On its own, it's not sufficient.
So, let's say you get mercy. Mercy is not sufficient. I mean, you know, lots of people are getting mercy, and they don't do anything with it. So it's applying mercy. So you take the theoretical conception and you strive to realize it. Someone can, you know, a hungry man can be given a plate of food, but he has to eat it. You can have the conception, food will make me feel strong again after I've been fasting. Here's a plate of food. One has to receive, act upon the mercy that is received. Act upon the conception. Prabhupada writes it in Bhagavad Gita, in his purport, the one who acts in knowledge increases his faith. He increases his faith because when you act in knowledge, you get an experience. When you get an experience, it nurtures your faith. So there's the theoretical conception. We have to apply it or strive to. And then we'll realize our own limitations to accomplish full application. So then we become dependent upon mercy. What by that is, we just like made our relationship by depending upon the mercy. That's relationship. We just entered into our relationship with Krishna. And then boom. It's the relationship. That's the essence. Not the knowledge is the essence. Or even applying, because applying could be in, you know, kartahamiti manyate. I'm applying. It's the relationship. Where we're doing out of service and we're depending upon the Supreme Lord's mercy to accomplish that service. All right? Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.